Welcome back to the Inside Pass News 24's dedicated daily Rugby World Cup podcast. For the last 7 weeks and some change, we've been doing this for you every day. And today we are wrapping up our podcast coverage of what has been just a fantastic tournament. The celebrations, though, continuing for the next few days in South Africa. Today, of course, Hamlin Mostert is the start of the trophy tour. The box in Johannesburg at the moment. Kanyiso Twaku, back from France, had a night's rest and now he's on the Bok bus, hard at work again, following the box around Johannesburg, Soweto and Pretoria today. Their day obviously starting at the Union Buildings this morning, where they met President Cyril Ramaphosa. And Mostert, the tournament's over. Are you missing it yet?
No, it was long. obviously a memorable one for us.
Yeah, I mean, South Africa, obviously four-time champions and the country celebrating as they should. To wrap up our coverage of this tournament, we thought it would be quite fun to just go back and look at some of the highlights, some of the lowlights in some cases, and just really touch on some of the memorable moments that we've seen over the last 7 weeks. And we'll be doing that in the form of News 24. News 24's 2023 Rugby World Cup Awards. So we've just scribbled down a few categories and Mostert and I will go through them, have a chat and see if we can come up with something resembling an awards winners list. Let's start, Herman, with the referee of the tournament. Now, this is such a difficult category, especially for us watching off TV. I mean, referees come with their own interpretations of the game. I guess the measure for a referee is if you get through a game with no incidents that are controversial, nothing of any, you know, hugely, no huge talking points where both teams feel like they've got a fair crack of the game and the game has been allowed to run. I thought Angus Gardner was good in the pool stages of the competition. I really liked the way he communicated with the captains. You know, maybe got a couple of things wrong. I think he had that embarrassing moment with Bongi and Bonambi when he, you know, asked Bongi who the captain was of the team, and Bongi said, "Well, it's me." But what about you? I mean, who were the refs who stood out for you in the competition?
I think for me, I think obviously you've got to commend Wayne Barnes. He made the final for a reason. So he's right up there. But I think Ben O'Keefe from New Zealand would probably edge it for me as the ref of the tournament. I mean, he obviously refed that fantastic quarterfinal between South Africa and France. Yeah. And then he got rewarded for the semifinal between South Africa and England again. So that shows that he had, you know, they had faith in his capabilities after that. You know, the French were moaning about his performance, but it seemed to me every team that lost in the knockouts had an issue with the referee, and that's probably the way the global game is going nowadays. That as soon as the team that loses always moans about the referee, because there's so many little 50-50 calls that you can debate and you can argue. I mean, in a contact sport with so many rules, they are bound to be different views or interpretations that come into place. But for me, O'Keefe, I think he maybe would just edge it. Obviously, he couldn't be rewarded with the final referee because New Zealand played in the final. You obviously can't referee your own country. So for me, he would edge it.
Would have been interesting to see what they would have done if O'Keefe would have got the final had New Zealand not been playing. But it's a good point. I think, you know, you can't please everyone. Someone's going to be unhappy at the end of a game, and make no mistake, South Africans don't mind a moan at a referee when the result doesn't go our way. You know, we love our fans, we win very well, but we also can lose in quite spectacular fashion sometimes. And if the box had fallen on the wrong side of those knockouts, make no mistake, there would have been some video footage doing the rounds on social of you know, refereeing errors. Look, Ben O'Keefe, if you're South African, has to be the guy for you, because there was so much concern going into those knockout games, particularly the quarterfinal against the hosts, when you're going, given South Africa's history with referees, given that Rassie's been so vocal, given what happened in the Lions series with Nick Berry and the World Rugby video, you know, the bad boys of rugby in the eyes of World Rugby when it comes to refereeing. So there was a lot of concern that in a game like that, with a crowd like that at home, France were going to get, you know, the calls kind of falling their way. And I think actually, and I might be wrong, but I think in every single knockout game the Box played, from quarterfinals through to finals, if you look at the refereeing calls, they actually probably, you know, fell South Africa's way more than they did the other way. Yeah. We're talking about the 50-50 goals.
I think before the French game, maybe, you know, subconsciously it could have influenced O'Keefe a little bit. I think you're right when you're saying maybe we got the rub of the green a little bit more than we thought we probably would. You know, we were talking about before that French game, I remember I was saying that the box can't be in a position where they only lead by 1 or 2 points right at the end or in the last 20 minutes because a crucial penalty will go against them. And it actually, the French were attacking right at the end there and he didn't blow the box up. The French felt they needed the penalty. Yeah. At one ruck there where they were complaining, and he didn't have the guts to do that. And I think we can probably say you can't say that with fact, but you can probably speculate and whether or ask the question whether maybe the way Rassie has, you know, conducted himself in the last few years, you know, obviously those videos that he makes, the mate of Nick Berry, obviously after that first British Lions test, you know, afterwards he's gone on social media to highlight refereeing indiscrepancies. I remember last year's test against France, I think Wayne Barnes was the referee there where we lost narrowly. Rassie also took to Twitter. Obviously he was punished for that and he was criticised heavily, but I think in a way, subconsciously, that probably had an influence on the referees, because if you think back at that British Lions series 2 years ago, after he put out that video of Nick Berry, the next two tests the box won and they probably got the rub of the green. You know, if he didn't do that, they probably would have lost that Lions series. Who knows? Yeah. So for me, yeah, it's a theory that I have, and I think subconsciously, you know, the refs wanted in a way to avoid that Rassie backlash, maybe, you know, of him, you know, going on social media, because he probably would have done it again if we were out of the World Cup. He probably wouldn't have cared, you know, what the repercussions were. So, yeah, it's a weird way of looking at it, but I think maybe that could be. Obviously, the referees won't acknowledge that and they won't say that, but I mean, subconsciously, maybe it had an impact, and I think we can say that the calls probably went more our way than it did go against us.
If you're South African, your referee of the tournament is surely Ben O'Keefe. Thank you, Ben, for your contributions to the quarterfinal and the semifinal. Let's move on to our next award, which is the Underdog Award for the team that performed above expectations at Rugby World Cup 2023. I suppose the nominees for this category are quite simple and clear-cut, unless I'm missing someone. You've got Portugal, who got their first Rugby World Cup win of the tournament, beat Fiji, and also got a draw against Georgia. Your Fiji themselves, I guess, who knocked over Australia and made it through to a quarterfinal and came very close to a semifinal. And then who else would there be there?
Maybe Argentina.
Argentina, but perhaps, they had an easy semifinal. Draw,
so
what would you go? Got to be Portugal?
For me, it's between Portugal and Fiji. Obviously, Fiji beat Australia, but now in hindsight, looking at that, Australia, this is the worst Australian team ever. I mean, we saw they started to beat Georgia. They didn't even look impressive against Portugal. I mean, obviously, they lost heavily to Wales. It's the biggest loss they ever suffered against Wales. Fiji also in the quarterfinals against England, they ran England very close. They got back to level pegging midway through that second half, but they obviously just didn't make it. But I think for me, Portugal, I would probably say Portugal is the success story of the Minnows for this World Cup.
Yeah.
Simply because, I mean, we probably don't think about it that much, but for them to have drawn against Georgia was a significant result for them, because Georgia were heavily favoured for that game.
Almost won it as well. I think there was a kick in the last.
They had a penalty that they missed at the end.
Yeah.
And then for them to beat Fiji, after Fiji had beaten Australia, and they probably should have beaten Wales as well. They had a good chance at the end to beat Wales. It was only a knock-on right on the touchline that cost them. You could argue that was the upset of the tournament, and probably the upset of the year almost. You know, it's a true minnow underdog story for them to come through and beat Fiji in that way.
Yeah.
So I would give it to Portugal.
Yeah, that was a huge result. I mean, Fiji, you remember, in that game, needed the losing bonus point at the least to qualify for the knockouts, and which they did get because they lost by a couple of points. But no, just fantastic. You know, we had chatted about the Minnows, and at every World Cup you have that same conversation around, should the Minnows be playing against the top tier nations when you get those landslide victories? And, you know,
well, now there's going to be the game. 24 teams at the next World Cup.
Yeah, so you'll have even more of them. Yeah. But when you see results like this, and Portugal standing up and giving displays like that, then it's very encouraging for the future of the competition. This, I suppose, feeds into the next awards category, where we said flop of the tournament. And we've mentioned the Wallabies and Eddie Jones in Australia, a very, very disappointing campaign for them. Eddie Jones rolling the dice with his squad selection, some big, bold calls saying that he was planning for the future and for 2027. I think he did that because in his mind he could have that selection gamble and still have enough to get through the pool at the very least. I think if he had known that they were going to get knocked out of the pool stages, you know, that some of those senior players would have been at the World Cup. Very disappointing for the Wallabies.
Yeah, look, I think he was very cock-a-hoop before the tournament, because he knew they had a supposedly an easy draw. You know, he probably fancied them to get past Wales because Wales also weren't at their highest point. You know, the Wales are also in a rebuilding phase. So I think he probably figured that they would beat Wales and obviously didn't expect to lose against Fiji. And then they would have made the quarterfinals, and then you know, it would have been a quarterfinal against Argentina, which they also would have backed themselves. So I think before the tournament, he was very confident that they would still make the semifinals. And that would have obviously been a success for them, given where they were beforehand and the last couple of years that they've had. So, and then possibly maybe a third place a playoff win, which would have given them a bronze medal. So, you know, we'll remember that press conference before the tournament where he was standing with his cowboy hat on and telling all the Australian journos to give themselves uppercuts for daring to criticise him, you know. So it backfired pretty badly, and this was the worst Wallabies team in their history, no doubt.
Yeah. Here's one from left field to consider. What about France for flop of the tournament? Look, that game against the Box could have gone either way and was very close. And they were by no means poor. But when you consider the expectations surrounding them, and you consider that this is probably the best on paper French team that has ever entered a World Cup, and this was really the one where they thought they could get over the line. And unfortunately, at the end for them, it's just another Rugby World Cup quarterfinal and huge disappointment coming out of the host nation. I mean, could you argue that given that expectation, France was a huge disappointment at the tournament?
Well, they weren't a huge disappointment in the way they played. They obviously beat New Zealand. They made it through to the quarters quite comfortably, obviously. And then they played well against South Africa. You know, they scored some nice tries. But I think they were, and I actually saw the stat on someone posted a tweet about they were about 8 minutes of just defensive lapses that cost the French. Remember, the Box scored a few breakaway tries that kept them in that game. At the end, they leaked 4 tries against South Africa. Obviously, the South Africa's 4th try in the second half was well constructed when Eben Etzebeth went over after significant pressure on the French line. But the 3 tries the Box scored in the first half were all from counterattacks.
Yeah.
And it came after just sort of brain farts on defense from France. And just a few minutes of probably losing concentration, and that was enough for them to exit the World Cup. If you take that away, they were probably the best team at this tournament. I still think they're the best team in the world. They just didn't win that match, you know. But that's what happens in knockout games. So, yeah, I wouldn't call them a worse flop than the Wallabies, but it's obviously disappointing because it's a massive chance squandered for them to win. They've never won the Rugby World Cup. They've lost in 3 finals before. So this was their tournament, was set up there for them, and they didn't take it. And so it's a disappointment, but probably not a total flop, because I mean, there's a bright future for them, you know, with Galtier as coach. There's still a core group of players that will be there in 4 years' time. Remember, just at the previous World Cup and the period just before the previous World Cup, they were in shambles. It was the worst French team ever, probably. Yeah. And Galtier has come in and he's resurrected them. I think if he stays there, they've got obviously Dupont, who's still young, and he's the captain. He's the best rugby player in the world. You know, I think they've got a good shot in 4 years' time.
Sorry, Eddie, I tried to get you off the hook there, but Mostert's having none of it. He says Wallabies undoubtedly the flop of Rugby World Cup 2023, and it's hard to argue with that. Let's move on to coach of the tournament and a couple of options there. We obviously saw Fiji doing very well. I thought Michael Checker to get Argentina through to the semifinals, even though it was an easier pathway, did very well in that role. Even though Argentina probably didn't hit their best throughout the tournament, but it was still a semi-final. But it's got to be Russ Knauber, Jacques Nienaber and Rassie Erasmus, and some of the calls that were taken over the course of the competition, replacing Malcolm Marks, the injured Malcolm Marks, with Andre Pollard, the way they got Pollard back into the mix gradually, game by game, from the knockouts, getting him in, well, from Tonga, I think he started, coming back by the final, he was fit enough to play 80 minutes. Brilliant player management there with Pollard. The Dion Ferree exercise, he played 77 minutes in a Rugby World Cup final as a makeshift hooker. That worked. The 7-1 bench split in a Rugby World Cup final, no one ever thought that would be possible. I mean, just everything they did seemed to work at this tournament, and you surely can't look past the Springbok coaching team, which really is one. I mean, you know, Nienaber and Erasmus are essentially one head coach together. But they've got to take this award.
Yeah, obviously they won the tournament. But those two in tandem, obviously they work very closely together. We spoke yesterday about Rassie's involvement as a director of rugby. He's very much involved as a coach as well. So you can almost argue that it's a dual coaching role. Both of those guys, basically the head coach. Some would argue that Rassie was even more in charge. But it doesn't matter. Like I said, it was a cohesive unit and they were a happy bunch. And They have to get that award. Obviously, Andy Farrell won the Coach of the Year award for Ireland, but obviously we must remember that was an award for the whole year, not just for the Rugby World Cup.
Sure.
Obviously, Ireland won 17 matches in a row before they lost that quarterfinal to New Zealand.
And also beat the Bucks at the World
Cup. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's a case for him. For him winning that award, but I still think Nienaber should have won that award, because if you look at the boxes here, I think they won 10 from 12 matches at the end. You know, they lost in New Zealand, there was one match they lost, and they lost to Ireland, but they had some really, I mean, they beat France in France, they obviously won the World Cup final, they thrashed the Wallabies, they won the World Cup. So, but definitely for this tournament, Russ Nienaber would obviously take the prize.
No arguments from me. Let's move on to our next award, which is Match of the Tournament. Which game stood out above the rest? A couple of options here, I suppose. And I think they're both the quarterfinals. You know, you had a couple of those games. I think it was the Japan, Argentina, or, you know, you had a couple of like very high-flying games in the pool stages that were certainly very, very entertaining. But in terms of proper, proper test match, World Cup knockout rugby, France against South Africa in the quarterfinals, and also that New Zealand Ireland game, were just two brilliant games of rugby to watch as a spectator.
Yeah, those two were two worthy of two finals. People are talking about the semi. It should have been two. Obviously, it should have been two semi-finals if the rankings didn't work out the way it was. And obviously, the draw was made 3 years before the tournament, so that meant that these two blockbuster matches would be quarterfinals and not semi-finals. Luckily, that rule has been changed, so we won't have that scenario in future, the rankings issue. but those matches, you know, any one of those two games could have been the final. I mean, that first half that South Africa and France played, you know, I remember I wrote the story with the headline called A First Half for the Ages. And that's essentially what it was. That I've never seen a rugby match played with such intensity of that first half between France and South Africa. The second half was a little bit of a lull, but I mean it was very hard to replicate that.
Yeah.
And the same with Ireland and New Zealand. The intensity was just ferocious. You know, a lot of people talk that about Ireland choking. I wouldn't. Maybe at the start, you know, New Zealand ran in 13-0 lead early on in the game, and that at the end won them the match. Was, I mean, if you trail that much against the All Blacks, you don't come back and beat them. The Ireland actually nearly did. Ireland actually dominated the rest of the game. So, apart from the poor start, the Irish actually they actually didn't choke. You know, they played really well. That phase play that they set up, the quick hands, the high tempo game that they play. It was a real spectacle. So I can't choose between which one of those, but those two, obviously the two matches of the tournament for me.
Yeah, that France-South Africa quarterfinal, I mean, very quickly after full-time there, you had some pretty highly respected critics and rugby pundits from around the world calling it the greatest game of rugby ever, which I think says a lot. You know, it was like two heavyweight boxers landing some big blows early and about, and then
seven tries as well.
Yeah, I mean, that first half was just crazy. You know, some big shots fired in that first half, and then it kind of became a bit more cagey and a bit more. It had all the elements of a great game of rugby. I also think, you know, we have to give special mention here to the Rugby World Cup final as well, because I mean, from a South African point of view, Yo, those last 40 minutes were just so incredibly tense, and you were literally just glued to your screen if you were able to watch, because, I mean, it was just hanging in the balance for so long. In terms of good television, with all of the drama and tension that you want from these games, I mean, that game had it all as well. But I think, you know, the general consensus would probably be that, yeah, somewhere France, South Africa maybe to take it, and then New Zealand, Ireland.
Second, probably.
Let's talk about the blunder of the tournament, the one individual moment that left somebody hanging their heads. For me, and geez, it wasn't his fault. He was so incredibly unlucky. But just given the stakes and how high they were at the time, Sam Kane's first half red card in the World Cup final against the Springboks. You know, you're the captain of your country, and they've got to play more than half of the game with 14 men because of one moment of just the slightest, you know, error in judgment. It was so incredibly unlucky for him, but you'll do well to find a bigger moment, a bigger blunder at World Cup 2023.
Yeah, obviously the first time ever someone's been sent off with red card in the World Cup. But for me, like I spoke to you earlier, that this was bound to happen with the policing of these laws at the moment. You know, contact sport, these things are going to happen. It wasn't intentional. The high hit, but obviously, according to the letter of the rule book, it was a deserved red card. You know, the impact was straight into Jesse Krill's face. It wasn't lower and then it went up. Like the Kolisi incident for me was only a yellow card because Kolisi went lower and then it sort of he went higher after that. So there was mitigation in the Kolisi scenario, but not in the Kane scenario. And remember, the All Blacks, it seems like they don't always learn from their mistakes, because they in the pre World Cup match that we played against them at Twickenham, they lost Scott Barrett to a red card as well. So they've now played two games against the Boks where they've received a red card, and but I think the game needs an overhaul in that sense, where common sense needs to come into this, and the referees need to be able to give that more leeway in scenarios like that, because otherwise we're going to see these incidents keep on, and it's going to become even more frequent now because they're just policing this high tackle rule so much more stricter than they normally did. And this is what's going to happen. There's going to be more red cards, and it was like a ticking time bomb for me that it would happen on the grandest of stages. And unfortunately for Sam Kane, that you could say that's the blunder of the tournament. I'm also thinking back of you could argue, but obviously not that significant for them, but Namibia's Juan Daisel, the centre, taking out Antoine Dupont and breaking his cheekbone.
Yeah.
Obviously Namibia were out of the World Cup in any case, but maybe if you want to have a go at the French, you could argue with Coach Galtier, why was Dupont on the field still in the second half? They were already 50 points ahead. I should have taken him off at half time. And he wouldn't have, that incident obviously wouldn't have happened. So maybe that's a second blunder that you can blame the French on. Obviously, Dupont recovered remarkably to play the quarterfinal against the Boks, but I don't think maybe he wasn't at his best. Perhaps he obviously had to wear that protective gear. So that's another incident that pops up. But obviously, if you get a red card in a World Cup final, and it actually wasn't a World Cup marred by that many incidents, apart from the ones mentioned. That Kane obviously has to get that blunder, unfortunately.
And credit to Sam Kane for the way he handled that. I mean, just would have been absolutely devastated, but kind of held his head high and took it really well. And actually, we talk so often about red cards ruining big games of rugby. That one didn't really. You know, the game didn't really lose any of its tension and its drama and its quality after the red card. And I think obviously because of the Sia yellow card in the Colby. Second half and the Colby yellow card. So the Boks ended up playing half the second half with no, you know, with 14 players anyway. But yeah, credit to Kane and the All Blacks for how they stayed in that fight. It was really incredible given that setback. One more award from us, and it's the big one. Who is our Rugby World Cup player of the tournament? I actually don't know. I've got no idea what you've picked here. What are you thinking? I'll let you go first here, and then I'll give you mine afterwards.
Jeez, I'm almost leaning towards, you know, this Springbok bomb squad was so significant and changed matches, changed almost all the matches that they played in. Obviously, there was this massive talk about the 7-1 bench split and and all that. And a guy that's for me an unsung hero is Kwagga Smith. Wow. I saw stats this morning that he performed the most turnovers of any player in the tournament. And obviously he didn't play as many minutes as some of the other players because he's always on the bench, always comes on. But the impact that he made, and you can look at there are video clips on Twitter or social media X as they call it now. There's a nice video clip of a nice compilation of how Kwagga came on in this final and changed that, or didn't change the game, but held the All Blacks out.
Yeah,
with crucial turnovers,
the things you don't really see, that rip in the tackle.
Yeah, crucial tackles. He's just everywhere, all over the park. And the same happened in the England and the France games. You know, every time Kwagga came on, he made a significant difference. And for me, he was definitely, if you have to pick a bench player of the tournament, then definitely Kwagga would be there.
Yeah.
Obviously, Andre Pollard kicked all these goals, kicked all 13 kicks. Jesse Krill was superb at outside centre. Everyone wrote him off and said, well, it's a pity Lekanyo Arms not playing. But, you know, this World Cup at the end was won by defence, and Krill's defence was also right up there.
Yeah.
So for me, but then again, that heroic performance from Pieter Steph, the 28 tackles in the final, he's just a war horse, you know.
Just one for the ages. Yeah. I mean, we'll be watching those highlights reels forever, you know. That immense.
So for me, he obviously started all the matches, all the main matches. So for me, he would be my player of the tournament from a starting perspective. But if I can sort of add an addendum to that, the bomb squad player of the tournament is Kwagga Smith.
Agreed. For me, at the time of his exit in the quarterfinals of the competition, Bundi Aki was up there in terms of the best performance. Yeah. He was just brilliant, and even in that quarterfinal, I mean, just the best player on the field, and fell on the wrong side of the result, which was very unlucky. But for me, the player of the tournament is Eben Etzebeth. I think he was just colossus again, an absolute monster in the big games and the moments that counted. That France game, the quarterfinal, the second half, the way he muscled, muscled that pack over the line in that game, and maybe was a bit quieter in the semi-final.
Stepped up in the final again.
And stepped up in the final again. I just think when Eben Etzebeth is in that pack, he is just, you know, stronger than everyone around him, just a force of nature that kind of pulls, you know, the people around him moving in the right direction. I think you can't underestimate his value to the pack. And I think, for me, if I had to pick a player of the tournament, it would be him. But like you say, Herman, I mean, geez, that Bok pack in general, I mean, you could go anywhere. And Pieter Steph would be in that equation. Even Dion Ferry, you know, I mean, given the way he had to perform in that final and in the knockouts after Malcolm Marx was injured. So certainly a lot of options, and you'll find, I think, that most of them are South African.
Well, they won, so.
And that's it. Guys, we're going to leave it there. It's just been so much fun chatting about this tournament throughout all of it. Don't forget, there's another World Cup on the go at the moment. Siya Kolisi has been very vocal on trying to drive South Africans to support Themba Bavuma and the Proteas, who are now pretty much in the Cricket World Cup semi-finals. We'll start chatting about that tournament the closer we get to the semi-finals, where South Africa now looks set to play. This, for the last time, has been The Inside Pass. Thank you so much for joining us. All the best, and cheers.